Hey guys, I'm Julia, the host of Always Time for True Crime. Each week, I cover a lesser-known case of murder, both solved and unsolved, disappearances, or serial killers. So if you're looking for something beyond Ted Bundy or JonBenet Ramsey, come check out Always Time for True Crime and learn about some cases you may have never heard of. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts.
True Consequences is a proud member of the Borellis Podcasters Guild.
The Oracle Network.
Look deeper.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Bondeen. This episode deals with a discussion of child abduction, child sexual abuse, physical child abuse, and murder. It may not be appropriate for younger or sensitive audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of True Consequences. I'm your host, Eric Carter Londeen. Today we are looking at a very frustrating and difficult case. This case has been baffling investigators and family for the last 20 years. There have been some recent developments that seem promising on the face and led to renewed hope. Today I'm taking you through the tragic disappearance of 7-year-old Robbie Romero from Santa Fe, New Mexico. This case is especially difficult because it is unsolved. There were so many leads and people identified that it was extremely difficult to know what is relevant and what is not. I'm going to try and present you with as much information as possible, and please note that not all this information is relevant to the case, but I felt it was important to show you how much information there is and how many false leads there were. It's a lot of detail to digest in one sitting, which is why I'm breaking this case into two parts. If you or anyone you know has any information that can lead to the location of Robbie or that could lead to the arrest of those responsible, please call the New Mexico Department of Public Safety at 1-800-457-3463 or email dps.missingperson@state.nm.us. June 7, 2000 was like any other summer day in northern New Mexico. It was unseasonably cool, with the high only reaching 88 degrees Fahrenheit. It was a typical summer day for most of the residents of Santa Fe. In fact, you would probably find kids riding bikes in local neighborhoods, parks packed with families enjoying the sunny and cool weather, and shouts of joy from kids playing at a local public pool. But June 7th, 2000, would become an absolute nightmare that has yet to end for the Romero family, who lived on Bellama Road in Santa Fe. At approximately 7 p.m., 7-year-old Robbie Romero decided to walk a few blocks to his friend's house at 2900 Bellama. This was an activity that he had regularly done, and his family didn't think much of it, as it was, after all, only a few blocks away. Robbie never made it to his friend's house, and he was never heard from or seen again. According to the police file, Robbie was last seen by his brothers, Ronnie and Ricky. Robbie's mom, Evelyn, told police and searchers that Robert was last seen wearing a blue muscle shirt and blue jean pants. He was described as 4 foot 5 inches tall, and he weighed approximately 80 pounds. Robbie's family spent 8 hours trying to find him as soon as they realized that he was not at his friend's house. They eventually brought law enforcement in on the search. Initial interviews would show it was around 6:30 p.m., that Robbie announced that he would be walking to his friend's house. One of the investigators on the case wrote the following, quote, "I learned from Detective Gomez and Bryant that the missing child was last seen approximately 6:30 p.m. on the 7th by brothers Ronnie and Ricky, while the victim was sleeping on a living room sofa. Evidently, the victim had, at some point, awakened and said he would be going to a friend's house down the street. According to Detective Bryant and Gomez, In the subsequent interviews with Ricky and the friends, conflicting stories had developed. Apparently, Ricky was denying seeing or being at the friend's house, and that the victim's brother had been with him. Apparently, the friends were stating that Ricky had been with his brother while the victim was playing Nintendo at a friend's house. This friend, I was told, was named Marcos. End quote. Due to inconsistencies in the brother's stories, detectives decided to interview Ricky again, and he agreed. Here's an excerpt from the interview transcript. Quote, at the police station, Ricky stated that he had been helping his dad plaster the house, had went inside for a break to get some water. Ricky said he saw his brothers Ronnie and Robert sleeping on the living room sofa as he went into the kitchen. When he came back through the living room, Ricky said Robert was not there. So he asked Ronnie, where did Robert go? Ricky said Ronnie told him that Robert had said he was going to Junior's house. Apparently, Ronnie then told Robert to go ask Dad first. Ricky then stated that he asked permission to go play and then did so. Ricky said he went to Junior's house and described at some point meeting up with Johnny Miller, and the two of them walked Miller's dog around the block. It was unclear if during this walk or at a later time, Ricky said he went to Junior's house, but found nobody there. Subsequently, Ricky said he went to Marcos's house. There, Ricky said he was playing Nintendo while Marcos played outside. At this point, Ricky continued to insist on not seeing or being with Robert. During the course of the interview, Detective Gomez informed us that while Ricky was at Marcos's house playing in the yard, Marcos at some point had asked his mother if he could go with Ricky and Robert to the arroyo. Evidently, Marcos's mother told him no. At this time, another neighborhood child also playing with Marcos and Ricky, was identified as Jermaine, had also asked his parents for permission to go with Ricky and Robert to the arroyo. Evidently, he too was denied permission. With this newly acquired information, we again pressed Ricky about his location during the time period when Robert disappeared. Ricky then added that while playing Nintendo, he happened to look out the window and saw Robert walking from the arroyo to the direction of their house. Ricky again denied being at Marcos's house, and after more direct questioning, Ricky reluctantly, crying at this time, admitted that he met up with Robert as Robert was walking by Marcos's and they both walked to their house. At this point, Ricky described that he was walking about 10 to 15 feet ahead of Robert. Then just before getting home, Ricky claimed that Robert told him, "Tell Dad I'll be home shortly," and then Ricky described Robert walking through a walkway towards Matt's house. Ricky said that he thought Robert was going to Matt's house because Matt lived at the end of the walkway that Robert walked down. Ricky said he did not actually see Robert go down the walkway, and he said from there he went home and did not see Robert after that. End quote. So this would be the start of a long investigation, and police would chase down leads and theories that would eventually lead to nowhere. Robbie's mother, Evelyn, has been extremely critical of the efforts the police made to investigate the case from the beginning. She felt that too much time was spent focusing on leads that were not fruitful. And looking at the case file, I've definitely seen some interesting things. There were several psychics that came forward to make several claims about what happened to Robbie. And from reading the reports, it seemed like the police took some of these claims seriously, or at least serious enough to follow up on them. And I'm not sure that I feel these tips are worthy of follow-up, especially since they proved to be unfounded and based on nothing factual. Having said that, let's look at some of the leads the police followed up on. It's important to note that much of this information is just pure documentation from the police report and doesn't necessarily mean that it is accurate or true. Also, police had released the description of a Hispanic male with long hair as a person of interest to the media. This resulted in several reported sightings from all over the state. From the report, here are some of the leads that the police documented. On June 8, 2000, police canvassed the neighborhood on Bellama Drive, as well as the surrounding neighborhoods, by going door to door and asking if anyone had witnessed anything at all. Police employed the help of civilian volunteers for flyer distribution, as well as awareness in the neighborhood. Let's talk about some psychics. So from the official report, quote, on 6/10/2000, Detective Danny Ramirez and I spoke with a psychic, who advised us that she had seen or had visions about this case. We went to several locations where she felt Robert Romero might be. However, we did not locate the missing child at any of the locations that we went to. We were assisted by Lieutenant Robert Romero, Sergeant Gilbert C. DeBaca, and Detective Brian Gonzalez, who were all on four-wheel ATVs. We did not develop any reliable information in reference to this case. On June 11th, 2000, 1200 hours, Detective Danny Ramirez and I were recontacted by the psychic, who advised us that she would like to go back to the area. Behind the Via Linda Mall, we proceeded back there and checked the area. However, we did not locate any reliable evidence in reference to this case. We used both patrol, investigative units, and an ATV, and also used cadaver search trained dogs in the area behind the mall. We did not locate any reliant evidence in reference to this case. Psychic number 2 told police that sometime after seeing the news about Robert Romero, she had a vision. She said that she gets visions sometimes, and they turn out to be true. She said that in her vision, the boy was running from a black man. The boy fell and hurt his leg. The black man hurt the boy before, and the boy knows him. On June 10, 2000, at about 18:50 hours, she arrived at the command post to pass on further information. She said, in another vision, there is something about a seesaw. Also, she said that the black man had a scar or tattoo on his left wrist area. She said he lived in a white house with a flat roof. The house has wood floors with a crawl space, and the boy is in the crawl space. The black man has kids, but they do not live there. They only visit. The black man has an older model, white car, possibly a Cadillac. Psychic number 3. She claimed that she had a strong feeling about an arroyo that had already been cleared by the police. Psychic number 4. Quote, said that Robbie was dead and that she sees him 3 miles west of Santa Fe. She said the suspect bludgeoned Robbie and that now Robert was in branches on trees in the desert. The man who took him kept him alive for 5 days in a camp area. She also said that she saw an old adobe structure, 5 trees that are 12 foot to 15 foot tall. She sees an arroyo which has been crossed 2 or 3 times. To the east is a small mountain range and a desert area. A single wide trailer is visible and it is about 1/2 mile from a small side road. She went on to say that burnt trees in the arroyo can be seen after the fire. She also said that the offender is from California and he recently got out of a correctional facility there. The vehicle will have either Arizona or Washington license plates. She says he's 5'10" tall, 165 pounds, clean cut, driving a Honda or Hyundai hatchback that is about 10 years old. I don't want to be disrespectful to people who claim to have psychic abilities, but looking through this case and seeing all of these people come out of the woodwork is super frustrating. I just feel strongly that I know these people believe that they have visions and that they see these things, but none of these tips from the psychics were true. Not one of them. None of them led to anything meaningful. One psychic made them spend a whole day searching in areas where Robbie was not found. I just get frustrated when I see people coming out of the woodwork trying to offer tips that have no bearing on a case. Wasting the time of police, wasting the time of those who are searching, and really not providing any meaningful help at all to the situation. Police also started looking into sex offenders in the area in order to determine if perhaps Robbie had been abducted by a registered sex offender. One such offender lived 2 blocks from Robbie's family. This individual drove a maroon 4-door vehicle, which matched the description that many eyewitnesses gave of suspicious vehicles in the area the day of Robbie's disappearance. The individual was questioned by police, his vehicle was searched, and his mother gave him an alibi for the evening of June 7th. However, there were many other vehicles that were listed as suspicious by eyewitnesses. This is not an exhaustive list of all of the vehicles that were listed in the police report, but it gives you an idea of what police were dealing with. 1. A white Cadillac. A car matching this description was found and processed, but there was no evidence of blood or anything else. 2. An old trashed out van. 3. A speeding white two-door car. 4. An older model teal or grayish blue boxy Dodge sedan. 5. A green Ford minivan. 6. A white van with Colorado plates, which was seen near a school where a man was allegedly trying to abduct children in downtown Santa Fe. And 7. A blue Dodge. Police learned from their canvassing efforts that a man was spotted hiding from a police helicopter, but he was only described as a black man with braided hair. There was no additional information about what he was wearing, how old he was, how tall he was, how much he weighed. None of that was included in the tip. Another tip came in about a man following a teenage girl. Again, no additional information was provided as it pertains to race, height, weight, age, any of that. Someone reported seeing a suspicious man while watering his lawn when he saw a Hispanic male, around 5'10", 140 pounds, and about 35 years of age, with dark, long, scraggly hair, riding a bicycle. He said the older man was yelling something to a younger male. The witness did not remember what the man was wearing. Police received a tip that Robbie may be in an abandoned apartment complex. And here's a quote from the official report. Quote, "In apartment number 43, a number of shoe prints were visible in a layer of dust on a carpeted floor. Some of the shoe prints were very small and appeared to have been made by a child-sized shoe with a zigzag sole pattern. In this room, there were also adult-sized shoe prints from at least two different types of shoes. Rooms in this building also showed signs of occupancy and contained such items as kitchenware, clothing, shoes, food, bedding, and illegal drug paraphernalia." End quote. Police noted that the building should be searched more thoroughly with K-9 units, but it's not clear if that ever happened. After interviewing a man named by one of the psychics, the man claimed that Robbie's dad had, quote, beaten Robbie the week before his disappearance. This was not corroborated by any evidence, but he did claim that his brother was friends with Robbie's dad, and that's how he learned this information. An eyewitness called in a tip and said that either Friday, June 9th or Thursday, June 8th at about 4:30 p.m., he observed a blonde female and a young boy hitchhiking. The witness stated that they were headed towards Albuquerque. He stated the boy looked about 7 or 8 years of age and appeared to be Hispanic or Indian. Someone called and claimed that a boy matching Robbie's description was with a couple as well as two other kids at the Comfort Inn Suites Hotel. And they claimed that they checked in on the evening of June 7th at around 8 p.m., but that they had already checked out of the hotel. No other information was provided. On June 11th, someone called the local news station, KOB-TV4, and said, quote, "If you want to know what happened to the boy, check St. Francis's Church," end quote. The caller did not provide any further information before hanging up the phone. It is unknown if the caller was male or female. End quote. The church was searched and nothing was found except for a crucifix and an article about Robbie's disappearance. However, the priest claims that these items were placed on the altar by one of the staff from the church. Let's take a quick break. And we're back. We're picking up where we left off, looking into the leads that police were investigating. Police looked at two vacant houses in the neighborhood, thoroughly searched them, and nothing was found. Police also took video of the mass that was held for Robbie in hopes that the person responsible might show up and be able to be identified. There's no further indication if they found anything on those tapes. All that the police report states is that the tapes were placed into evidence. Several calls came in about a Hispanic man with long hair. He was spotted in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Cochiti Lake, and more areas around the state. None of these calls resulted in any arrests. A woman called and left a message to say she had seen a male driving with a small boy in his passenger seat screaming. The observation was made in Albuquerque. Police tried to contact her multiple times, but she never returned their calls. Several parks and arroyos were checked as tips came in. Nothing was found. On June 14th, police started surveilling Robbie's older brother, Ronnie. Some tips came in indicating that Ronnie was selling drugs and owed people a lot of money. One person claimed that Robbie was being abused by his father. Again, these claims are just claims, and they were not corroborated. A roadblock was set up on June 14th to interview many people as they drove through the neighborhood. The only new information that was obtained from this was that one person heard Robbie's disappearance was gang-related due to the brothers and sister having gang involvement. Another said that she saw a male matching the description of having long hair 4 days prior at the National Guard Park just looking around. Another person that was interviewed said that she did see a male with long hair on Wednesday, June 7th, standing on the corner of Pinos Altos and Campanas around 7 p.m., No other information was obtained. A man called police and claimed, quote, he saw a male in the arroyo near St. John's College on June 9th between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m. The male matched the description of the man wanted by police for questioning. The caller stated that the male was riding a bike and was wearing a tank top, shorts, and had a blue backpack. He spoke with state police regarding the male and he believes that the area was checked. At this time, no further information was provided on this individual. End quote. On June 14th, DNA swabs were taken from Robbie's brothers Ronnie and Ricky, as well as Robbie's mom Evelyn. Another sex offender named Lawrence was interviewed on June 14th. He happened to drive an old, beat-up, brown Chevy van. In the interview, he claimed that he liked vans. They were good for, quote, moving bulky items. He also claimed that he didn't like pickup trucks. He was originally from Ohio and served 10 years in prison for sexually assaulting a 12-year-old girl. Once he was released from prison, he moved to California and assaulted another underage girl. He was prosecuted, and once he finished his sentence, he moved to New Mexico. He claimed to have no interest in boys, and that he didn't act on his urges to harm young girls because he controls them by watching videos and talking to his friend, Dennis. Dennis is another pedophile who lives in the same apartment complex as Lawrence. Lawrence claimed that he was not in therapy, but stated that talking to Dennis was therapeutic for him. Side note, I don't even know what to say about this. I'm not sure if this man had been watched after he made these admissions, but I sure hope to God that he was. Also, his friend Dennis was looked into, but according to his boss, he was working from 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. on the night that Robbie disappeared. However, it's important to note that he did target underage boys. But according to police records, quote, he is under doctor's care and taking medication to help him control his urges, end quote. Another sex offender named Gerald was interviewed because an eyewitness claimed to have seen him at a park staring at kids. He previously had been arrested for indecent exposure at a public pool. He was nervous when he spoke to police, but he claimed to not know anything about the case and denied being at the park. No further information was provided about him or whether he was looked into further. Here's a quote from the police report. At 22:38 hours on June 17th, 2000, I was dispatched to US 84/285 northbound to attempt to locate a blue Dodge vehicle containing a male driver, female passenger, and child in the back seat. The vehicle was called in by an anonymous caller who felt it might be related to the case. The caller said the vehicle bore Mexican license plate number, but gave no other information. I checked the area as far as the Tizuke exit, but did not find the vehicle. End quote. On June 17, 2020, a woman called police and claimed that she had information concerning Robert Romero and his older brother, Ronnie Romero. She said that about 4 o'clock in the morning, Ronnie went to her house in hopes of staying there for a while. Apparently, Ronnie went to the house because he had no transportation. He had been drinking prior to the visit and was a little drunk. She refused to let Ronnie stay at the house and told him to call his brother. While waiting for a ride, Ronnie told the woman that the police investigation was going in the wrong direction. She asked him for clarification, and Ronnie said that he was the one that killed Robbie. She asked Ronnie for clarification on that statement. Ronnie said that he killed Robbie and hid him at an undisclosed location. Shortly after Ronnie's statement, his ride arrived and the caller told him to leave. The caller claims that she saw Ronnie's brother did not pick him up, but rather an unidentified female. She did not recognize the driver, but said that the car was a red four-door Honda. The driver of the Honda did not approach the house or get out of the car. The driver honked the car horn and Ronnie left. Ronnie stayed at the house for about 20 minutes. On June 21st, Robbie's dad waved down a police officer that was driving near his house and said the following, quote, "Mr. Romero told me all he wanted was to find Robbie, whether it was good or bad. He also told me that he was hurting in his heart and needed to find his boy. I told him we were doing everything we could to find Robbie and would continue until the person or persons responsible for Robbie's disappearance were in jail. Mr. Romero told me Sandy and Jeffrey, FBI agents, came to the house to speak with Ricky. He told them we would have to check with Evelyn and the lawyer first. Mr. Romero told me he wished the questioning of Ronnie would end so the family could go back to normal. I told him as long as Ronnie continues to hide information and lie to investigators, the pressure would stay on and most likely get worse. I told Mr. Romero that the police department's main goal was to find Robbie and then go after those responsible. I told him if Ronnie would sit down and give a truthful statement to the police, we could leave them alone. Mr. Romero did not reply. Mr. Romero said that he was talking to Ricky and was starting to have questions about his story. Ricky told him on June 7th, when he walked into the house, Ronnie was laying on the couch. Ricky asked Ronnie where Robbie was, and Ronnie told him Robbie was at Junior's house. As Ricky walked further into the living room, he saw Robbie lying on the couch. Ricky called Ronnie a liar, walked into the kitchen to get some water, and then walked back out into the living room. Robbie was gone. Ricky asked Ronnie where Robbie went, and Ronnie told him to Junior's house. Mr. Romero told me if Ronnie did something, he could not see Ronnie having the time to do anything between the time Ricky walked into the living room to get his water and returned to the living room, unless Ronnie owed somebody something and they took Robbie instead. I told Mr. Romero that was one possibility, but only Ronnie would know, and he was not telling. End quote. An interesting note in the police report reads as follows. I was informed that a search of missing child Robert Romero was ongoing currently and that items had been collected by detectives earlier today. Items noted were a pair of black denim shorts and a blue mesh tank top shirt. The shirt was turned over to me later by Detective Bill Bryant at the Monica Lucero Park, where a command center had been established. The shirt did have a dark colored stain on the left front of the shoulder strap area. The stain was swabbed and field tested for presumptive blood with a positive reaction. The shirt was taken back to the Santa Fe Police Department and was luminol tested along with the denim shorts. Luminol did not react to the shorts or the stain on the shirt. There was no reaction to any part of either articles of clothing with the exception of the top button, which was exposed and is a metal known to react with luminol. Items were immediately sealed in paper bags and will be submitted into evidence. These were only some of the leads that were looked into by police. There were more psychics involved as well. And I'll be looking into more of these leads in the second part of this case. For now, I want to look at some of the details that the police investigated. It seemed that the police were looking at the possibility that one of the Romero family members might have been responsible. They even searched the vehicles at the Romero home. This is what police found. Quote, on June 22, 2000, at approximately 1600 hours, I proceeded to the residence at 2933 Bellama Drive, the Romero residence, in which I was informed that the mother of missing child Robert Romero had given consent to search a blue-in-color Ford Mustang 1996. The vehicle was found to be parked in the driveway on the western side of the residence. I photographed the vehicle prior to conducting any type of search on the vehicle. I was informed that the owners of the vehicle were listed as Rudy or Evelyn Romero, who were both present at the time that I arrived at the residence. I was also informed that the attorney representing Evelyn and Rudy Romero was present as well. I was also informed that the attorney representing the brother of Robert Romero, Ronnie Romero, was also present. Law enforcement representatives were Detective Sandra Gomez of the Santa Fe Police Department, Detective Mary Garcia of the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department, and four agents from the FBI. I was advised that Evelyn Romero had signed a consent to search form and that the attorney had been present during such time. Once all the photographs were obtained, I proceeded to open the trunk by utilizing the trunk release button in the glove compartment. It should be noted that there were no keys available to the vehicle. Once the trunk was opened, I photographed items and objects within as they were. I then proceeded to search the trunk area for any possible evidence that may be connected to the disappearance of Robert Romero. Items taken into evidence were one black metal tire iron, one white 1 gallon milk jug that had an odor of a petroleum product, and five towels that were white with red pinstripes and had dark colored stains. All items were bagged separately and were submitted into evidence. The interior of the vehicle appeared to be very dusty, and it was noted that there were dried blossoms from a fruit tree within the vehicle. I noted that the dust and blossoms had accumulated and gave the appearance that the vehicle had not been occupied recently. The vehicle was then inventoried and towed to the evidence warehouse, where Lieutenant Cindy Waterworth met myself and Detective Gomez. Once there, the vehicle was reopened and the vehicle was processed with luminol. A positive reaction to the luminol was noted on the floorboard of the back seat, just below the front passenger seat. The section of carpeting that reacted positively was cut away and sealed in a paper envelope. No other positive reactions were noted with the exception of metal objects within the trunk. Nothing further was done to or with this vehicle. It was then towed back to the Romero residence. End quote. Based on the police report, it seemed that investigators strongly believed that Ronnie had some knowledge or involvement in Robbie's disappearance. They went to Ronnie's workplace to question a coworker, and this is what he said. Quote, on July 7th, 2000, at approximately 8:30 a.m., I contacted Mr. who is employed by Ruse Mechanical, is a co-worker of Ronnie Romero. He was questioned as to his relationship with Mr. Romero and to see if he had observed anything unusual since Mr. Romero started working with him. Mr. described Mr. Romero as a very quiet person who does not talk much while at work. Mr. did state that on two occasions last week, Mr. Romero made two statements that bothered him to the point that when he got off work, he went home and discussed it with his brother. The first statement that Mr. Romero made was when he asked Mr. the following, what do they do with the trash? Mr. thought this was unusual because it was out of the context of the conversation that was taking place with another employee. Went on to explain that the trash would be taken to a transfer station and then to a landfill where it would be buried. The next question came when Mr. inquired, "Do the police keep in touch with you guys?" At which point, Mr. Romero replied, "Not me, just my mom and dad. Besides, he's dead already. He already found his creator." He stated that he had no further information to offer at this time, but would contact me if something else came up. At this time, there is no other information. End quote. Okay, guys, so that is how I'm going to end part one of this series. Next time on True Consequences, we will look at the other leads that the police investigated, including the further investigation into the potential involvement of Robbie's brother, Ronnie. We will discuss a development that led people to believe that Robbie might still be alive. And we will also discuss the family's lawsuit against the Santa Fe Police Department and the outcome from that trial. And finally, I will take you through more of the police documentation on this case. If you or anyone you know has information related to the disappearance of Robert Marcos Romero, please call the New Mexico Department of Public Safety at 1-800-457-3463 or email dps.missingperson@state.nm.us. Thanks for listening and stay safe, New Mexico.
Do you think this is Robbie Romero, your son?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I can see the resemblance and his mannerisms, but then I wonder if that's just me wanting it so bad, you know, of him being alive and well. And
On September 14, 2001, the Santa Fe Police Department was provided with information that a 19-year-old male individual, identified as Robert Terrazas, was portraying himself as Robbie Romero. Robbie Romero is a missing child, and his disappearance has been investigated by this department since 2000. We received information that Mr. Terrazas was going to meet with Evelyn Romero, the mother of Robbie Romero, whom he referred to as his birth mother. Ms. Romero, again, is the mother of the missing child. Police officers spoke with Mr. Terrazas at the home of Ms. Romero, where he consented to provide a DNA, where he consented to provide a DNA sample. A sample was then taken from Mr. Terrazas, and that sample was delivered to the New Mexico State Department of Public Safety Crime Lab, where it was processed. The result of the exam that Mr. Terrazas is not Ms. Romero's missing child.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.